Men Wild, the nerd athlete. Cole isn't what he seems, I say roughly. I know he comes off as the smart, mysterious jock, but there's something slimy about him. I don't think he's slimy at all, she objects. Right, because you've had a plethora of deep, meaningful conversations with him, I crack. Trust me, he's putting on a show. Agree to disagree, she smirks. Besides, you're in no position to judge who I'm interested in. From what I hear, you only date airheads. I smirk right back. You're wrong. Am I? Yep, I only sleep with airheads. I don't date. Slut. She pauses, curiosity etching into her face. How come you don't date? I'm sure every girl at this college would kill to be your girlfriend. I'm not looking for a relationship. That perplexes her. Why not? Relationships can be really fulfilling, says the woman who's single. I'm single because I haven't found anyone I connect with, not because I'm anti-relationship. It's nice having someone to spend time with. You know, talking, cuddling, all that mushy stuff. Don't you want that? Eventually, but not right now. I flash a cocky grin. If I ever feel the need to talk to someone, I've got you. So your airheads get the sex, and I'm the one who has to listen to you babble? She shakes her head. I feel like I'm getting the short end of that deal. I wiggle my eyebrows. Aw, you want the sex too, Wellesley? I'm happy to give it to you. Her cheeks turn the brightest shade of red I've ever seen, and I burst out laughing. Relax. I'm just kidding. I'm not stupid enough to bone my tutor. I'll end up breaking your heart, and then you'll feed me false information, and I'll fail the midterm. Again, she says sweetly. You'll fail the midterm again. I flip up my middle finger, but I'm grinning as I do it. You taking off now, or should I put on episode 3? Episode 3, definitely. We get comfortable on the bed again. Me on my back with my head on 3 pillows, Hannah on her stomach at the foot of the bed. The next episode is intense, and once it's done, we're both eager to watch the next one. Before I know it, we're done with the first disc and moving on to the second. In between cliffhangers, we discuss what we've just seen and make predictions, and honestly, I haven't had this much platonic fun with a girl in, well, ever. I think his brother-in-law's onto him, Hannah muses. Are you kidding me? I bet they save that reveal for the end. I think Skylar's gonna find out soon, though. I hope she divorces him. Walter White is the devil. Seriously, I hate him. I chuckle. He's an anti-hero. You're supposed to hate him. The next episode comes on, and we shut up immediately because this is the kind of show that requires your full attention. The next thing I know, we've reached the season finale, which ends with a scene that leaves us wide-eyed. Holy shit, I exclaim. We're done with the first season. Hannah bites her lip and steals a glance at the alarm clock. It's nearly 10 o'clock. We've just watched 7 episodes without so much as a bathroom break. I expect her to announce it's time for her to go, but she sighs instead. Do you have season 2? I can't control my laughter. You want to keep watching? After that finale, how can we not? She makes a good point. At least the premiere, she says. Don't you want to see what happens? I totally do, and so I don't object when she gets up to load the next disc. You want a snack or something? I offer. Sure. I'll go see what we have. I find 2 microwave popcorn pouches in the kitchen cupboard, nuke them both, and head back upstairs with 2 bowls of popcorn in my hands. Hannah has stolen my spot, her dark hair fanned on my stack of pillows, legs stretched out in front of her. Her red and black polka dot socks make me grin. I've noticed she doesn't wear designer clothing or preppy get-ups like most of the females at this school, or the trashy party clothes you see on Greek Row and at the campus bars on weekends. Hannah is all about skinny jeans and leggings and tight-fitting sweaters, which might look elegant if she didn't always throw in a flash of bright color, like the socks, or the mittens, or those quirky hair clips she wears. Is one of those for me? She gestures to the bowls I'm holding. Yup. I hand one over and she sits up and shoves her hand inside, then giggles. I can't eat popcorn without thinking about Napoleon. I blink. The Emperor? She laughs harder. No, my dog. Well, my family's dog. He's in Indiana with my parents.
What kind of dog?
A huge mutt crossed with a gazillion breeds, but he mostly looks like a German Shepherd.
Does Napoleon like popcorn? I ask politely. She grins.
He loves it. We got him when he was a puppy, and this one time, I was about 10, my parents took me to the movies, and he broke into the cupboards when we were out and managed to get into a box of microwave popcorn packets. There were like 50 of them in there. My mom is all about sales, so if there's ever a great deal at the grocery store, she'll buy up the entire shelf of whatever product is on sale. I guess that month it was Orville Redenbacher's. I swear that dog ate every single one of them, packaging included. He was pooping out whole kernels and bits of paper for days.
I snicker.
My dad was freaking out, she says. He thought Napoleon would get food poisoning or something, but the vet said it was no biggie and that it would all come out eventually. She pauses. Do you have any pets?
No, but my grandparents had a cat when I was growing up. Her name was Peaches and she was batshit crazy. I shovel a handful of popcorn into my mouth, chuckling as I chew. She was sweet to me and my mom, but she fucking hated my dad, which isn't surprising, I guess. My grandparents hated him too, so she must have been following their lead. But man, she terrorized the old bastard.
Hannah grins. What did she do?
Scratch him any chance she got, piss on his shoes, that kind of stuff. I suddenly burst out laughing. Oh, shit. The best thing she ever did? It was Thanksgiving and we were at my grandparents' place in Buffalo, and we're all gathered at the table about to eat when Peaches comes in through the cat door. Right behind the house was this ravine, so she used to prowl around there. Anyway, she waltzes inside, and she's got something in her mouth, but none of us can tell what it is. Oh, God, I don't like where this is going. I'm grinning so hard it hurts. Peaches jumps up on the table like she's the queen of the castle or some shit, strolls along the edge of the tablecloth and dumps a dead rabbit on my father's plate. Hannah gasps.
Seriously gross.
Gramps is pissing himself laughing and Gran is freaking out because she thinks all the food on the table is contaminated now and my dad. My humor fades as I remember the look on the old man's face. Let's just say he wasn't pleased. Understatement of the year. A chill runs up my spine as I recall what happened when we got back to Boston a few days later. What he did to my mother as punishment for shaming him, as he'd accused her of doing during his rage. The only saving grace is that Mom died a year later. She wasn't there to witness it when he turned his rage on me, and I'm grateful for that every day of my life. Beside me, Hannah goes somber as well.
I'm not seeing my parents for Thanksgiving.
I glance over, studying her face. It's obvious she's upset, and her soft confession distracts me from the crushing memories pressing down on my chest. Do you usually go home?
No, we go to my aunt's for the holidays, but my folks can't afford it this year, and I can't afford to go to them.
There's a false note there at the end, but I can't imagine what she might be lying about.
It's okay,
she murmurs when she sees the sympathy on my face.
There's always Christmas, right?
I nod, though, for me, there are no holidays. I'd rather slip my wrists than go home and spend the holidays with my father. I set my popcorn bowl on the nightstand and pick up the remote. Ready for season two? I ask in a casual voice. The conversation has gotten too heavy, and I'm eager to derail it. Bring it on! This time I sit beside her, but there's still 2 feet of space between us. It's messed up how much I'm enjoying this. Just hanging out with a girl without worrying about how I'm going to get rid of her or that she's going to start making demands on me. We watch the premiere episode of season two, followed by the next one, and then the next one, and the next thing I know, it's 3 in the morning. Oh crap, is that the time? Hannah blurts out. As she voices the question, a huge yawn overtakes her face. I rub my weary eyes, unable to fathom how it got this late without either one of us noticing. We've literally watched a season and a half of television in one sitting. Shit, I mumble. I can't believe how late it is. She yawns again, which triggers a yawn of my own, and then we're both sitting in my dark bedroom. I don't even remember turning off the light, yawning like 2 people who haven't slept in months. I should go. She stumbles off the bed and rakes her hands through her hair. Where's my phone? I need to call a cab. My next yawn nearly breaks my jaw. I can drive you, I say groggily, sliding off the mattress. No way, you had 2 beers tonight. Hours ago, I object. I'm good to drive. No. Exasperation courses through me. I'm not letting you take a cab and walk through campus at 3 in the fucking morning. Either I drive you or you stay here. She looks startled. I'm not staying here. Then I'm driving you. No argument. Her gaze travels to the 2 Bud bottles on the nightstand. I sense her reluctance, but I also see the exhaustion lining her features. After a moment, her shoulders droop and she lets out a breath. Fine. I'll crash on your couch. I'm quick to shake my head. No, it's better if you sleep in here. Wrong thing to say, because her body goes stiffer than a board. I'm not sleeping in your bedroom. I live with 3 hockey players, Wellesley, who, by the way, still aren't home from a night of partying. I'm not saying it'll happen, but there's a chance one of them might stumble into the living room drunk off their asses and grope you or something if they find you on the couch. I, on the other hand, have no interest in groping you. I gesture to my massive bed. This thing can sleep 7. You won't even know I'm here. You know, a gentleman would offer to sleep on the floor. Do I look like a gentleman to you? She laughs at that. Nope. There's a beat of silence. Okay, I'll crash here, but only because I can barely keep my eyes open and I really don't want to wait for a taxi. I walk over to my dresser. You want something to sleep in? T-shirt? Sweatpants? A t-shirt would be great. Even in the darkness, I can make out the flush on her cheeks. Do you have an extra toothbrush? Yep. Cabinet under the sink. I give her one of my old t-shirts and she disappears into the bathroom. I strip off my shirt and jeans and climb into bed in my boxers. As I get comfortable, I hear the toilet flush and the faucet turn on and off, and then Hannah returns, her bare feet softly slapping the hardwood. She stands at the side of the bed for so long that I finally groan in irritation. Would you get in bed already? I grumble. I don't bite. And even if I did, I'm half asleep. So quit looming over me like a weirdo and get in here. The mattress dips slightly as she climbs on the bed. There's a tug on the blanket, a rustling and a sigh, and then she's lying beside me. Well, not quite. She's all the way on the other side of the bed, no doubt clinging to the edge of the mattress so she doesn't fall off. I'm too tired to make a sarcastic remark, so I just mumble, "Night," and close my eyes again. Night, she murmurs back. A few seconds later, I'm dead to the world. Chapter 12, Garrett. I'm addicted to that moment right before I wake up, when the wispy cobwebs in my brain thread together to form a coherent ball of consciousness. It's the ultimate WTF moment. Disorienting and foggy, with half my brain still lost in whatever dream I'm having. But something is different about this morning. My body feels warmer than usual, and I become aware of the sweetest smell. Strawberries, maybe? No, cherries. Definitely cherries. And something tickles the bottom of my chin. Something soft and hard at the same time. A head? Yep, there's a head nestled in the crook of my neck, and a slender arm draped across my stomach. A warm leg hooked on my thigh, and a soft breast resting on my left pec. My eyes open gradually, and I find Hannah snuggled up against me. I'm on my back, with both my arms wrapped around her, holding her tight to my body. No wonder my muscles are so stiff. Did we sleep like this all night? I remember being on opposite sides of the bed when I fell asleep, so far apart that I half expected to wake up and find Hannah on the floor. But now, we're tangled in each other's arms. It's nice. I'm growing more alert, alert enough to register that last thought. It's nice? What the fuck am I thinking? Cuddling is an act reserved solely for girlfriends, and I don't do girlfriends. But I don't release her either. I'm fully awake now, breathing in her scent and basking in the heat of her body. I glance at the alarm clock, which is due to go off in 5 minutes. I always wake up ahead of the alarm, as if my body knows it's time to get up, but I still set it as a precaution. It's 7. I've only gotten 4 hours of sleep, but I feel oddly rested, at peace. I'm not ready to let go of that feeling yet, so I just lie there with Hannah in my arms and listen to her steady breathing. Is that a boner? Hannah's horrified voice slices through the serene silence. She shoots into a sitting position, then stumbles back down. Yep. Ms. Graceful trips while lying down because her leg is still slung over my thighs. And yep, there's definite morning wood happening in my southern region. Relax, I say in a sleep gravelly voice. It's just a morning chub.
A morning chub? She echoes. Oh my God, you're so...
male? I supply dryly. Yes, I am, and that's what happens to men in the morning. It's biology, Wellesley. We wake up with wood. If it makes you feel better, I am in no way turned on right now.
Fine. I'll accept your biology excuse. Now, can you please explain why you decided to cuddle with me in the middle of the night?
I didn't decide a damn thing. I was asleep. For all I know, you're the one who crawled on top of me.
I would never. Not even in my sleep. My subconscious knows better than that.
She jabs her finger in the center of my chest, then dives off the bed in a blur of motion. The moment she's gone, I experience a sense of loss. I'm no longer warm and cozy, but cold and alone. As I sit up and stretch my arms over my head, her green eyes fix on my bare chest, and her nose wrinkles in distaste.
I cannot believe my head was on that thing all night.
My chest is not a thing. I give her a pointed look. Other women seem to like it just fine.
I'm not other women.
No, she isn't. Because other women don't entertain me as much as she does. I suddenly wonder how I ever made it through life without Hannah Wells's sarcastic barbs and annoyed grumbles.
Stop grinning, she snaps.
I'm grinning? Didn't even realize it. She narrows her eyes as she fumbles for her clothes. My t-shirt hangs to her knees, emphasizing just how small she is.
Don't you dare tell anyone about this, she orders.
Why not? It'll only boost your street cred.
I don't want to be another one of your puck bunnies, and I don't want people thinking I am, understood?
Her use of the term makes me grin harder. I like that she's picking up the hockey lingo, Maybe one of these days I'll even convince her to come to a game. I have a feeling Hannah would be a great heckler, which is always an advantage at home games. Though knowing her, she'd probably heckle us and give the other team the advantage. Well, if you really don't want anyone to think that, then I suggest you get dressed fast. I cock a brow. Unless you want my teammates to witness your walk of shame, which they will because we have practice in 30 minutes. Panic lights her eyes. Crap. I have to say, this is the first time a girl's been worried about getting caught in my bedroom. Normally they strut out like they've just bagged Brad Pitt. Hannah takes a breath.
We studied. We watched TV. I went home late. That's what happened. Got it?
I fight back laughter. As you wish.
Did you really just Princess Bride me?
Did you really just use Princess Bride as a verb? She glowers at me, then points a finger in my direction.
I expect you to be dressed and ready to go when I get out of that bathroom. You're driving me home before your roommates wake up.
A chuckle of amusement slips out as she marches into the washroom and slams the door.
Hannah, I'm functioning on 4 hours of sleep. Kill me now. On the bright side, nobody saw Garrett drop me off at the dorms earlier, so at least my honor is still intact. My morning classes drag on forever. I have a theory class followed by a music history seminar. Both require me to actually pay attention, which is hard to do when I can barely keep my eyes open. I've already chugged 3 coffees today, but instead of giving me an energy boost, the caffeine just drained the meager energy I had to begin with. I grab a late lunch in one of the campus dining halls, choosing a corner table in the back and sending out leave me alone vibes because I'm too damn tired to make conversation with anyone. The food succeeds in waking me up a little, and I'm early when I walk through the huge oak doors of the philosophy building. I near the ethics lecture hall and stop in my tracks. None other than Justin is loitering in the wide corridor, his dark eyebrows knitted as he texts on his phone. Even though I showered and changed at the dorm, I still feel like a total slob. My outfit consists of yoga pants, a green hoodie, and red rain boots. The weather forecast called for rain that didn't come, so now I feel like an idiot for my choice of footwear. Justin, on the other hand, is sheer perfection. Dark jeans hug his long, muscular legs, and his black sweater stretches across his broad shoulders in a delicious way that makes me shiver. My heart beats faster the closer I get. I'm trying to decide if I should say hello or just nod in greeting, but he solves that dilemma by speaking first.
Hey.
His mouth curves in a half smile.
Nice boots.
I sigh. It was supposed to rain.
That wasn't sarcasm. I'm totally digging the boots. They remind me of home.
He notices my quizzical look and quickly elaborates.
I'm from Seattle.
Oh, is that where you transferred from?
Yep. And trust me, if it's not raining there, then something's wrong. Rain boots are a necessity for survival when you live in Seattle.
He tucks his phone in his pocket, his voice taking on a casual note.
So, what happened to you on Wednesday?
I furrow my brow. What do you mean?
The Sigma party? I looked for you when I was done playing pool, but you were already gone.
Oh my God. He was looking for me?
Yeah, I left early. I answer, hoping I sound equally casual.
I had a 9 o'clock class the next morning.
Justin slants his head.
I heard you left with Garrett Graham.
That catches me off guard. I hadn't thought anyone saw Garrett and me leave together, but clearly I was wrong. And apparently word travels faster than the speed of light at Briar.
He gave me a ride home, I reply with a shrug.
Oh, I didn't know you guys were friends.
I smile impishly. There's a lot you don't know about me. Holy shit, I'm flirting with him. He smiles, too, and the sexiest dimple I've ever seen appears in his chin.
I guess you're right.
He pauses meaningfully.
Maybe we ought to change that.
Holy shit, he's flirting back. And as much as I hate to admit it, I'm starting to think Garrett's hard-to-get theory actually holds water. Justin seems curiously fixated on the fact that I left the party with Garrett.
So?
His eyes twinkle playfully.
What are you doing after Wellesley!
I swallow a groan at the cheerful interruption from who else? Garrett. A slight frown touches Justin's lips as Garrett strides up to us, but then he smiles and nods at the unwelcome intruder. Garrett holds two foam cups in his hands, and he thrusts one at me with a grin.
Got you a coffee. I figured you might need it.
I don't miss the strange look Justin shoots in our direction, or the flicker of displeasure in his eyes, but I gratefully accept the cup and pop the lid, blowing on the hot liquid before taking a tiny sip. You're a lifesaver, I breathe. Garrett nods at Justin.
Cole,
he says in greeting. The two of them exchange a manly hand slap type of thing, not a shake, but not quite a fist bump either.
Graham,
Justin says.
I heard you handed St. Anthony's asses to them this weekend. Nice win.
Thanks. Garrett chuckles.
I heard you got your ass handed to you against Brown. Bummer. There goes our perfect season, huh?
Justin says ruefully. Garrett shrugs.
You guys'll bounce back. Maxwell's arm is ridiculous. Tell me about it.
Since I rate sports talk on the same level of boring as politics and gardening, I take a step toward the door. I'm heading in. Thanks for the coffee, Garrett. My pulse continues to race as I enter the lecture hall. It's funny, but my life suddenly seems to be moving at lightning speed. Before the Sigma party, the most contact I had with Justin was one measly nod from 10 feet away, and that was over a 2-month span. Now, in less than a week, we've had 2 conversations, and either I was imagining it, or he was about to ask me out before Garrett interrupted. I slide into my usual seat next to Nell, who greets me with a smile.
Hey,
she says. Hey. I unzip my bag and grab a notebook and pen. How was your weekend?
Brutal. I had a huge chem test this morning, and I pulled an all-nighter to study for it.
How'd you do?
Oh, I definitely aced it.
She smiles happily, but the joy fades fast.
Now I just need to do better on this makeup on Friday, and all will be right in the world again.
You got my email, right? I had sent Nell a copy of my midterm earlier in the week, but she hadn't emailed back.
I did. Sorry I didn't respond, but I was focused on chem. I'm planning on reading through your answers tonight.
A shadow falls over us, and the next thing I know, Garrett slides into the seat beside me.
Wellesley, you got an extra pen?
Nell's eyebrows nearly hit the ceiling, and then she stares at me like I've sprouted a goatee in the past 3 seconds. I don't blame her. We've been seat buddies since school started, and not once have I even looked in Garrett Graham's direction, let alone talked to him. Nell isn't the only one who's fascinated by this new seating arrangement. When I look across the aisle, I find Justin watching us with an indecipherable expression on his face.
Wellesley, pen?
I shift my gaze back to Garrett.
You came to class unprepared? Shocker.
I reach into my bag again and rummage around for a pen, then slap it into his hand.
Thanks.
He offers that cocky grin of his before opening his notebook to a fresh page. Then he leans forward and peeks over at Nell.
I'm Garrett.
She gapes at the hand he's sticking out at her before reaching over to shake it.
Nell,
she says.
Nice to meet you.
Tolbert arrives just then, and as Garrett turns his attention to the podium, Nell shoots me another WTF look. I bring my lips close to her ear and murmur,
we're kind of friends now.
I heard that,
Garrett pipes up.
And there's no kinda about it. We're best friends, Nellie. Don't let Wellesley tell you otherwise.
Nell giggles softly. I just sigh.
Our lecture today focuses on some seriously heavy issues, mainly the conflict between an individual's conscience versus responsibility to society. Tolbert uses the Nazis as our example. Needless to say, it's a depressing hour and a half. After class, I'm dying to finish my conversation with Justin, but Garrett has other ideas. Rather than let me linger, or rather let me make a beeline for Justin, he firmly takes my arm and helps me to my feet. I steal a look at Justin, who walks briskly down the aisle as if he's trying to catch up to us.
Ignore him.
Garrett's voice is barely audible as he guides me out the door.
But I want to talk to him, I protest. I'm pretty sure he was going to ask me out before.
Garrett just plows forward, his hand like an iron vice around my forearm. I have to sprint to keep up with his long strides, and I'm annoyed as hell when we emerge into the cool October air. I'm tempted to look over my shoulder to see if Justin is behind us, but I know Garrett will chastise me if I do, so I resist the urge.
What the hell?
I demand, shaking his hand off me.
You're supposed to be unattainable, remember? You're making it too easy for him.
Aggravation rumbles inside me.
The whole point is to get him to notice me. Well, he's noticed me. Why can't I stop playing games now?
You've piqued his interest, Garrett says as we walk down the cobblestone path toward the courtyard. But if you want to keep his interest, you need to make him work for it. Men like a challenge.
I want to argue with him. Except I think he might be right.
Just play it cool until Maxwell's party, he advises.
Yes, sir, I grumble. Oh, and by the way, I'm canceling on you tonight. I'm exhausted from our marathon last night, and if I don't get some sleep, I'll be a zombie for the rest of the week.
Garrett doesn't look happy.
But we were going to start the hard stuff today.
Tell you what. I'll email you a sample essay question, something Tolbert would come up with. Give yourself 2 hours to write it, and tomorrow we'll go over it together. That way I can get a sense of what we need to work on.
Fine, he concedes. I've got practice in the morning and then class. Come over at noon?
Sure, but I gotta be out of there by 3 for rehearsal.
Cool. See you tomorrow then.
He ruffles my hair as if I'm a 5-year-old, then saunters off. A wry smile tugs on my lips as I watch him go, his silver and black hockey jacket plastering to his chest as he walks into the wind. I'm not the only one looking. Several females also swing their heads in his direction, and I can practically see their panties melt away as he flashes that rogue grin around. Rolling my eyes, I head off in the opposite direction. I don't want to be late for rehearsal, especially since Cass and I still haven't reached an agreement about his ludicrous choir idea. But when I walk into the music room, Cass is nowhere to be seen. Hey, I greet MJ, who's at the piano studying sheets of music. Her blonde head pops up, a strained smile on her face. Oh, hey, she pauses. Cass isn't coming today. Annoyance erupts in my belly. What do you mean he's not coming? He texted me a few minutes ago. He has a migraine.
Yeah, right.
I know for a fact that a bunch of our classmates, Cass included, went out for drinks last night because one of them texted me an invite when Garrett and I were watching Breaking Bad. It's easy to put two and two together. Cass is hungover, and that's why he bailed.
We can still rehearse, though, MJ says.
This time her smile reaches her eyes.
It might be nice to run through the song without stopping to argue every 5 seconds.
Yeah, except whatever we do today, he'll just veto tomorrow. I plop into a chair near the piano and pin her down with a hard look.
The choir idea is bullshit, MJ. You know it is. She nods in defeat.
I know.
Then why didn't you back me up? I demand, unable to mask my resentment. A blush appears on her pale cheeks. She gulps visibly.
Can you keep a secret?
Shit. I don't like where this is going.
Sure. Cass asked me out.
Oh. I try not to sound surprised, but it's hard to hide it. MJ is a sweet girl, and she's certainly not unattractive, but she's also the last person I'd consider Cass Donovan's type. As much as I loathe him, Cass is drop-dead gorgeous. He's got the kind of album cover-friendly face that will sell a lot of records one day, no doubt about that. And look, I'm not saying the plain girl can't get the hot guy. I'm sure it happens all the time. But Cass is a pompous, image-obsessed jerk. Someone that superficial would never be caught dead with a mousy thing like Mary Jane, no matter how sweet she is.
It's okay, she says with a laugh. I know you're surprised. I was too. He asked me before rehearsal that day.
She sighs.
You know, the choir day?
And all the puzzle pieces swiftly slide together. I know exactly what Cass is up to, and it takes some serious effort to swallow my anger. It's one thing to coax MJ into backing him up during our fights. It's another to lead the poor girl on. But what am I supposed to say to her? He only asked you out so you'd support all his crazy ideas for the showcase? I refuse to be an asshole, so I paste on the most polite smile I can muster and ask, "Do you want to go out with him?" Her cheeks go even redder, and then she nods.
Really?
I say skeptically. But he's such a diva. Like, giving Mariah Carey a run for her money, diva. You know that, right?
I know.
She looks embarrassed now.
But that's only because he's so passionate about singing. He's actually a nice guy when he wants to be.
When he wants to be? She says it like it's the endorsement of the year. But the way I see it, people should be nice because they are, not because it's a calculated move on their part. But I keep that opinion to myself, too. I adopt a tactful tone.
Are you afraid that if you disagree with his ideas, he'll renege on the date?
She winces.
It sounds pathetic when you phrase it like that.
How else does she want me to phrase it?
I just don't want to make any waves, you know?
She mumbles, looking uncomfortable. No, I don't know. At all. This is your song, MJ, and you shouldn't have to censor your opinions just to make Cass happy. If you hate the choir idea as much as I do, then tell him. Trust me, men appreciate a woman who speaks her mind. Yet, even as I say the words, I know Mary Jane Harper is not that woman. She's shy and awkward and spends most of her time hiding behind a piano or curled up in her dorm room writing love songs about boys who don't return the sentiment. Oh, shit. Something suddenly occurs to me. Is our song about Cass? I'm icked out at the thought that the emotional lyrics I've been singing for months might actually be about a guy I loathe.
I don't hate the choir idea, she hedges. I don't love it either, but I don't think it's terrible.
And in that moment, I know without a doubt, there's going to be a three-tiered fucking choir standing behind Cass and me at the winter showcase.
Chapter 13. Garrett. I'm working at the kitchen counter tonight, frustrated as fuck as I read over the practice essay Hannah graded for me earlier. She left my house with orders for me to redo the paper, but I'm having a tough time with it. The answer is simple, damn it. If someone commands you to murder millions of people, you say, no thanks, I'll pass.
except, going by the criteria laid out in this bullshit theory, there are pros and cons for both sides, and I can't wrap my head around it. I guess I suck at putting myself in someone else's shoes, and that's kind of disheartening. Question, I announce as Tuck wanders into the kitchen. Answer, he replies instantly. I haven't asked the question yet, asshole. Grinning, he washes his hands at the sink, and then ties a neon pink apron around his waist. Logan, Dean, and I gave him the frilly monstrosity as a joke for his birthday, on the argument that if he was going to be our mother hen, he might as well look the part. Tucker countered by insisting he's masculine enough to pull off any item of clothing we throw his way, and now he wears the damn thing like a badge of macho honor. Okay, I'll bite, he says as he heads to the fridge. What's the question? All right, so you're a Nazi. Fuck that, he interjects. Let me finish, will ya? You're a Nazi, and Hitler has just ordered you to commit an act that goes against everything you believe in. Do you say, cool beans, boss, I'll kill all these people for you, or do you say, fuck off, and risk getting killed yourself? I tell him to fuck off. Tuck pauses. Actually, no. I put a bullet in his head. Problem solved. I groan. I know, right? But this asshole, I point to the book on the counter, believes that government exists for a reason, and citizens need to trust their leader and obey his orders for the good of the society. So in theory, there's an argument to be made for genocide. Tuck pulls a tray of chicken drumsticks from the freezer. Bullshit. I'm not saying I agree with that line of thinking, but I'm supposed to argue this guy's point of view. I drag a frustrated hand over my scalp. I fucking hate this class, man. Tuck unwraps the meat tray and places it in the microwave. The redo's on Friday, huh? Yep, I say glumly. He hesitates. Are you going to play in the Eastwood game? I brighten up, because this morning I received official word from Coach that I'll definitely be on the ice on Friday. Apparently the midterm grades aren't entered into the system until the following Monday, so at the moment, my average is still what it needs to be. Come Monday, if my ethics grade is a D or lower, I'll be benched until I turn things around. Benched. Jesus. Just thinking about it makes me queasy. All I want to do is lead my team to another Frozen Four victory and make it to the pros. No, I want to excel in the pros. I want to prove to everyone that I got there on my own merit, and not because I happen to be a famous hockey player's son. It's all I've ever wanted, and I feel sick knowing that my goals, that everything I've worked so hard for, is in jeopardy because of one stupid class. Coach said I'm playing, I tell Tuck, who high-fives me so hard my palm stings. Hell yeah, he exclaims. Logan enters the kitchen, an unlit cigarette dangling from the corner of his mouth. You better not smoke that in here, Tucker warns. Linda will ream your ass. I'm going out back, Logan promises because he knows better than to piss off our landlady. Just wanted to let you guys know that Birdie and the guys are coming over tonight to watch the Bruins game. I narrow my eyes. What guys? Logan blinks innocently. You know, Birdie, Pierre, Hollis, Nico, if he can stop being pussy-whipped for long enough to leave his dorm. Rogers and Danny, Connor. Oh, Kenny, too, and... I stop him before he can name every guy on our roster. So the whole team, you mean? I say dryly. And they're good friends, those who have them. He glances at Tuck and me. It's cool, right? Won't be an all-nighter or anything. As long as it's BYOB, I'm cool, Tuck answers. And if Danny is coming, then you better lock up the liquor cabinet. We can move the hooch to G's room, Logan says with a snort. God knows he won't drink a drop of it. Tuck glances over at me with a grin. Poor baby, When are you gonna learn to handle your liquor like a man?
Hey, I handle the drinking part just fine. It's the morning after that does me in. I smirk at my teammates. Besides, I'm your captain. Somebody has to stay sober to keep your crazy asses in line.
Thanks, Mom.
Logan pauses and shakes his head.
Actually, no, you're the mom, he tells Tucker, grinning at Tuck's apron before turning back at me. Guess that makes you the dad. You two are positively domestic.
We both flip him the finger.
Aw, are Mommy and Daddy mad at me?
He gives a mock gasp.
Are you guys gonna get a divorce?
Fuck off, Tuck says, but he's laughing. The microwave beeps, and Tucker pulls out the defrosted chicken, then proceeds to cook our dinner while I do my homework at the counter. And damned if the whole thing isn't domestic as hell.
Chapter 14, Hannah.
Hey, Han-Han. Allie surprises me at work tonight, sliding into my booth with a beaming smile. When Sean slides in next to her, I have a tough time fighting a grin. They're sitting on the same side of the booth? Whoa, they must be getting serious again, because only couples who are madly in love do that.
Sup, Hannah?
Sean says as he slings his arm around Allie's slender shoulders.
Hey, I've been dealing with pain-in-the-ass customers all evening, so I'm genuinely happy to see some friendly faces. You guys want something to drink while you look at the menu?
Chocolate milkshake, please, Allie announces. Sean holds up his index and middle fingers.
Two straws, he adds with a wink.
I laugh. God, you two are so sweet, you're giving me a toothache. But I'm happy to see them happy. For a frat boy, Sean is actually pretty decent, and he's never fucked around on Allie as far as I know. Their past breakups were always her decision. She'd thought they were too young to be so serious, and Sean had been infinitely patient with her every time. I prepare their lover's milkshake, then deliver it to the booth with an extravagant bow.
Madame, monsieur.
Thanks, babe. Hey, so listen, Allie says as Sean studies the menu. Some of the girls on our floor are having a Ryan Gosling movie marathon tomorrow night.
Sean groans. Another Gosling fest? I don't know what chicks see in that guy. He's scrawny as shit.
He's beautiful, Allie corrects before glancing at me again. You in?
Depends what time.
Tracy's got a late class, but she'll be back by 9, so around then?
Shit, I'm tutoring at 9.
Allie's face clouds with disappointment.
Can't you try to tutor earlier?
She wiggles her eyebrows as if trying to entice me.
Val's making sangrias.
I have to admit, I am enticed. It's been a while since I've hung out with the girls or consumed anything alcoholic. I might not drink at parties, and for a damn good reason, but I don't mind getting my buzz on every now and then.
Let me call Garrett on my break. I'll see if he's free earlier.
Sean looks up from the menu, interested in the conversation again.
So, you and Graham are best buds now?
Nah, it's just a tutor-tutoree relationship.
Nah-uh, Allie teases. She turns to her boyfriend.
They're totally friends. They text and everything.
Fine. We're friends, I say grudgingly. When Sean gives me a knowing grin, I promptly scowl at him.
Just friends. So banish all those dirty thoughts from your mind.
Oh, come on. Can you really blame me? He's the captain of the hockey team, and he goes through girls faster than he goes through a roll of toilet paper. You know everyone's going to think you're his next conquest.
They can think whatever they want.
I offer a little shrug, but it's not like that with us.
Sean seems unconvinced, which I chalk up to being a guy thing.
I doubt there's a guy out there who believes that men and women are capable of being purely platonic. I leave Allie and Sean and tend to my other customers. When my break rolls around, I pop into the staff room in the back to call Garrett. The dial tone goes on forever before he finally answers, his gruff hello overpowered by the loud music in the background. "Hey, it's Hannah," I tell him.
"I know. I have caller ID, dumbass."
"I was calling to see if we can change our tutoring time for tomorrow." A swell of hip-hop blasts into my ear.
"Sorry, what?"
I raise my voice so he can hear me better. "Can we meet up earlier tomorrow? I've got plans at 9, so I was hoping I could come by around 7. Is that cool?" His response is drowned out by the deafening pounding of Jay-Z. "Where are you?" I'm practically shouting now.
"Home," comes his muffled response. "We invited a few people over to watch the game."
A few people? It sounds like he's in the middle of Times Square.
"So you're coming at 9?
I swallow my aggravation.
"No, at 7. Is that okay?"
"Garrett, beer me."
A voice ripples over the line. Judging by the faint Texas drawl, it must be Tucker.
"Hold on, Wellesley, one sec."
A rustling meets my ear, followed by a howl of laughter, and then Garrett comes back.
"Okay, tomorrow at 9 then."
7.
"Right, 7. Sorry, can't hear you at all. I'll see you tomorrow."
He hangs up on me, but I don't care. I've discovered this past week that Garrett never takes the time to say goodbye on the phone. It annoyed me at first, but now I sort of appreciate his time-saving approach. I shove my phone in my apron and re-enter the main room to tell Allie I'm good to go for tomorrow night, and she squeals in response.
"Yay! I can't wait to get my Gosling on. Hottest guy ever."
"I'm sitting right here, you know,"
Sean grumbles.
"Babe, have you seen that man's abs?"
she demands. He sighs. The following night, I show up at Garrett's house at 7 o'clock sharp and let myself in as usual. Before I head upstairs, I poke my head into the living room to say hi to Logan and the guys. Logan's not there, but Tuck and Dean are, and they glance up in confusion when they spot me.
"Hey, Wellesley."
Tucker wrinkles his forehead.
"What you doing here?"
"Tutoring your captain, what else?" Rolling my eyes, I start to edge away from the doorway.
"You don't want to go up there, baby doll,"
Dean calls out. I stop in my tracks.
"Why not?"
His light green eyes gleam in amusement.
He might have forgotten.
"Well, then I'll go up and remind him."
A minute later, I completely regret that course of action.
"Yo, Graham, let's get this over with so I can..."
I halt mid-sentence, freezing like a deer in headlights after I open the door. Embarrassment slams into me when I register what I'm seeing. Garrett is lying on the bed in all his bare-chested glory while a naked girl straddles his thighs. Yep, Miss Thang is buck naked and she whirls around in a cloud of blonde hair at the sound of my voice. Perky breasts assault my vision, but I don't have time to judge them one way or the other because her ear-piercing screech cuts through the air.
"What the hell?"
"Shit, I'm so sorry," I blurt out. Then I slam the door and race downstairs like I'm being chased by a serial killer. When I stumble into the living room a moment later, I'm greeted by two grinning faces.
"We told you not to go up there,"
Tucker says with a sigh. Dean's grin widens.
"How's the show? We can't hear much from down here, but I have a feeling she's a screamer."
I'm so mortified that my cheeks feel like they're burning from the inside out.
"Can you tell your slutty friend to call me when he's done? Actually, no. Tell him he's out of luck. My time is precious, damn it. I'm not tutoring him anymore when he obviously doesn't take my schedule seriously."
With that, I march out of the house. my emotions alternating between embarrassment and anger. Unbelievable. How is fooling around with some girl more important to him than passing his midterm? And what kind of jerk would do that when he knows I'm coming over? I'm halfway to Tracy's car when the front door bursts open and Garrett rushes out. He at least had the decency to put on a pair of jeans, but he's still not wearing a shirt. Or shoes, for that matter. He hurries over to me, his expression a mixture of sheepish and annoyed. What the hell was that? He demands. Are you kidding me? I retort. I should be asking you that question. You knew I was coming over.
You said 9.
I changed it to 7, and you know it. My lips twist in a scowl. Maybe next time you should pay more attention to me when I call you. He rakes a hand through his short hair, and his biceps bulge as he does it. The cold air causes goosebumps to rise on his smooth golden skin, and my gaze is unwittingly drawn to the thin line of hair that arrows toward his unbuttoned waistband. At the sight, an odd flicker of heat travels from my breasts to my core. My body suddenly feels tight and achy, my fingers tingling with the urge to, oh, for fuck's sake. No. So what if the guy is totally cut? That doesn't mean I want to ride him like a cowgirl. He already has someone else doing that to him. I'm sorry, okay? He grumbles. I screwed up. No, not okay. 1, you clearly don't respect my time, and 2, you clearly don't want to pass this class, otherwise your pants would be zipped and your textbook would be open. Oh, really? He challenges. So you expect me to believe that you study 24/7 and never hook up with anyone? Discomfort churns in my stomach, and when I don't answer, suspicion floods his eyes. You do hook up, don't you? An irritable breath escapes my lips. Of course I do, just not in a while.
What's a while?
1 year. Not that it's any of your business. I set my jaw and unlock the driver's door. Go back to your floozy, Garrett. I'm going home.
Floozy? He echoes. That's a rude assumption, don't you think? She could be a Rhodes Scholar for all you know.
I raise one eyebrow. Is she?
Well, no.
He relents. But Tiffany... I snort. Tiffany, of course. Her name is Tiffany.
Is a very smart girl.
He finishes darkly. Uh-huh. I'm sure she is. Go back to Ms. Smart, then. I'm out of here.
Can we reschedule for tomorrow?
I open the car door. No.
Is that so?
He glimpses his hand over the door frame. Then I guess our date on Saturday is off, too? He stares at me. I stare right back. But we both know he won't be the one backing down. I suddenly flash back to the conversation I had with Justin in the hallway the other day. My cheeks heat up again, but this time it has nothing to do with the fact that I just caught Garrett with his pants down, literally. Justin has finally acknowledged my existence, and if I bail on this party, I'll be passing up the opportunity to talk to him outside of school. It's not like we travel in the same circles. So unless I want to limit myself to a once-a-week interaction in ethics, I need to be proactive and seek him out away from the lecture hall. Fine, I mumble to Garrett. I'll see you tomorrow at 7. His mouth curves in a self-satisfied smile.
That's what I thought.
Chapter 15. Garrett. I make sure to be home, and alone, when Hannah shows up on Thursday night. I'm more amused than embarrassed that she walked in on Tiff and me yesterday, and hey, at least it hadn't been for the money shot. Hannah's face would have been 100 times redder if she'd heard Tiffany's screams of orgasm. Honestly, a part of me wonders if Tiff had been faking those porn star moans. I don't claim to be a stud in bed, but I'm attentive as hell, and I've never had any complaints in the past. But last night was the first time I felt like the chick in my bed was putting on a show. There'd been something incredibly unsatisfying about the whole thing. I don't know if she was faking it or simply exaggerating her pleasure, but either way, I'm not too eager for a repeat performance. Hannah knocks on my door, but she doesn't stop at one knock. She does it at least 10 more times and then 2 more even after I've shouted for her to come in. The door swings open and Hannah stumbles inside, tightly covering her eyes with both palms.
Is it safe?
She asks loudly. Eyes still shut, she stretches her arms out in front of her like a blind person feeling their way through the darkness. You're such a fucking brat, I say with a sigh. Her eyelids pop open and she fixes me with a dark look.
I'm just being careful, she answers in a haughty tone. God forbid I walk in on another one of your sex fests.
Don't worry, we hadn't even gotten to the sex part. If you must know, we were still in the foreplay stage, second and third base to be exact.
Gross. TMI.
You asked.
I did not.
She settles cross-legged on the bed and pulls the clasp binder out of her bag. Okay, enough chit-chat. Let's read over your revised essay and then we'll outline a few practice ones. I hand over the paper I'd fixed up, then lean back on the pillows as Hannah reads it. Once she's done, she looks over at me, and I can tell she's impressed.
This is pretty good, she admits.
Damned if I don't experience a burst of pride. I slaved over this Nazi paper, and Hannah's praise not only pleases me, but it also confirms that I'm getting better at putting myself in someone else's headspace.
Actually, it's really good.
She amends as she skims the conclusion again. I mock gasp. Holy shit, was that a compliment?
Nope. I take it back. It sucks ass.
Too late. I wag my finger at her. You think I'm smart? She lets out a heavy sigh.
You're smart when you apply yourself.
She pauses.
Okay, so this might be a total dick thing to say, but I always assumed the school was easier on athletes. Academically, I mean. You know, handing out free A's because you guys are so important.
I wish. I know a few guys on the Eastwood team whose professors don't even read their papers. They just slap an A on them and hand them back. But the Breyer profs make us work for it, assholes.
How are you doing in your other courses?
A's across the board and a pesky C in Spanish history, but that'll change once I turn in my final paper. I smirk. Guess I'm not the dumb jock you thought I was, huh?
I never thought you were dumb.
She sticks out her tongue.
I thought you were a jackass.
Thought? I pounce on the use of the past tense. Does that mean you've seen the error of your ways?
Nah, you're still a jackass,
she grins. But at least you're a smart one. Smart enough to ace this midterm. My spirits sink as I voice the question. The makeup is tomorrow, and I'm starting to stress about it again. I'm not sure I'm ready, but Hannah's confidence eases some of my uncertainty.
Definitely,
she assures me.
As long as you keep your own bias out of it and stick to what the philosophers would do, I think you'll be fine.
I better be. I really need this grade, Wellesley. Her voice softens.
The team's that important to you?
It's my whole life, I say simply.
Your whole life? Whoa. You're putting a lot of pressure on yourself, Garrett.
You want to talk about pressure? Bitterness colors my tone. Pressure is being 7 years old and forced to go on a high-protein diet to promote growth. Pressure is being woken up at the crack of dawn 6 days a week to skate and run drills while your father blows a whistle in your face for 2 hours. Pressure is being told that if you fail, you'll never be a real man.